Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, welcome to one more edition of Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. Look, thank you very much for spending this hour with me. Today is one of those days that actually one has to take pause based on all that's occurring in the country, but specifically one that is a bit more personal to me as a black man watching the occurrences that's going on. Not only, you know, we look at it we look at this at what's going on in Ferguson. We look at it what's going on in L.A., New York, all these different places, and you have to wonder, what is happening in America? What is happening in America? What is happening in America? You know, interesting enough, will this just be another black man executed by police, or will we finally do something about it? Yesterday, Michael Eric Dyson admonished President Obama for a rather neutral statement on the execution of Michael Brown. Is it time for the president to engage any further? I don't know. One of my previous CNN iReport colleagues and friends, David White, thinks so. He wrote on one of my posts the following. Even with all the nefarious stuff, and you know he didn't use stuff, Obama has to endure via the racist GOP, is what he put. He should have further engaged the nation on egregious police brutality on African Americans. Over the period of a month, we've witnessed a black woman being pummeled by an APS officer, a group of racist rogue cops in New York City choke a man to death, and now the shooting death of an unarmed teen in Ferguson. The time for PBO, President Barack Obama, to address race is now. A few months back, I wrote the piece, I was Trayvon Martin the day I came to America. It is amazing that all black men still are. What are your thoughts? Let's talk. I will also be following our hashtag politics done right on Twitter. I mean, if you have something that you want to tell me and you don't want to do it on air, though I'm asking you to give me a call on air. I mean, we're very nice and pleasant to everybody who calls. So again, folks, the telephone number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. Again, the hashtag is hashtag politics done right. Again, it's hashtag politics done right. Okay, what I want to do is start with that essay that I wrote, because as I watched all these things unfold and watch the misinformation and watch the fear that some people have for black men and watch what a whole lot of people are using as excuse, well, you know, look how they act, because as you know, on TV, what you see is what raises the eyebrow of some, and there is not a whole lot of context provided, even on supposedly liberal stations. It's sad. I just watched a video on Facebook today with a black guy coming on TV and saying, stop blaming all these other people and take care of yourself and all these things he's saying. The poor guy, in as much as what he said is true. What he fails to understand is systemic oppression and how that actually affects, I mean, not the people you see on TV, though they are the manifestation. What you see on TV is the manifestation. But for that engineer, that doctor, that lawyer, and then when I say that, I'm talking about that non-white doctor, that non-white lawyer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that reality is prescient. Yes, you see it on TV in a different form, but in every part of one's life, that reality is different. But let me start with this essay. Again, the number, folks, is 646-929-2495. I'd love you to give me a call, 646-929-2495. Do not be scared of this subject because, as I said before, it's very easy to talk to. I'd love to get engaged in what you're thinking, not what you think folks would want you to think, because that's not how change occurs. Change occurs when one feels free to express themselves without being judged, so that if their expression is wrong, they can be corrected, non-judgmental. And myself, corrected, non-judgmental. Anyhow, my first stop in America was, this is the essay. I titled the essay, "I Was Trayvon Martin the Day I Came to America." This stuff went viral a few months ago when it was released on several platforms. My first stop in America was a little town called Brenham, Texas, in 1979.
Folks, it seems like we went off air, so as usual, I had to go to my backup because the network sometimes gets a bit hairy here, actually not here, but at Blog Talk Radio. So here comes my backup, continuing with the read-in, it goes as follows. I was wet behind the ears, black kid. I was wet behind the ears, black kid that spoke with an accent in a country town. The black American kids were suspicious of me. The white American kids were curious. And the Hispanic American kids giggled when I spoke to them in Spanish. I hung out with Peruvian, Argentinian, Guatemalan, and Venezuelan friends most of that year. All strangers in a new land, away from our parents for the first time, who shared one thing in common. We could all communicate in Spanish, and when strange things happened, we could enter our cocoon. And it is amazing how quickly and quietly human beings adapt. We were walking down one of the few commercial streets in Brenham when some guy in a pickup truck just started shouting, "Nigger!" And if I remember correctly, something about being in the wrong part of town. It was directed solely at me because while we were all Latinos walking down that street, I was the only black one. I remember going to Padre Island for spring break. Six of us packed like sardines in my car. I remember getting to the beach house and the coldness with which I was treated on the island, compared to my geographic brothers and sisters from South and Central America. Funny thing is, they never had a clue. I always knew Blinn was a stepping stone to move up, and I moved up to the University of Texas at Austin after a year at Blinn to continue my engineering career. I had no problem getting in on my own merit. But most of my friends assume I got in thanks to some quota. They did not realize as a foreigner, I did not qualify. Most students and professors in many instances went out of their way to remind me that I was an other. I rallied the campus for UT's divestiture from South America. Given their overtly brutal apartheid system, I understood that fighting injustices somewhere else told to hold up a mirror to the injustices we feel and we face locally. I remember being stopped many times by the police. It's not that I was a bad driver. Most of the stops seemed to have only to do with a desire to question me. It was never confrontational. I did as I was told. You see, where I am from, Panama, a dispute with an officer guarantees a cracked skull with no legal recourse. So the cops in Austin likely thought I was a model citizen. From a young age, I always knew when and where to engage. I adapted. When I graduated from UT and went to work, I encountered the same preconceived notions. But work isn't the cops. I was vocal and never took any crap. Suffice it to say, I had 5 jobs in 5 years and finally formed my own company. When my company became very fairly successful, I moved to Kingwood, a nice suburb with a lot of trees and a very good school system for my daughter. My first memorable experience in Kingwood was walking in the trails and passing a white woman who immediately held her purse tightly and looked at me with horror. I looked at her and simply shook my head, seething. Another time I went cycling with one of my friends and stopped into a convenience store. When we left the store, my friend simply said, "I get it now." I guess I was his first black friend. Inside that store, he saw how differently a person with my skin color is treated. In 2013, I've been living in the U.S. for 34 years. The fact that we still mourn our Trayvon Martins and now Michael Brown means there is a lot more work for us to do. Preconceived notions and irrational hatred still pollute human interactions. Sometimes these weaknesses are codified into law. Black boys and men are stereotyped. Incarceration rates and crime rates are pointed to as justification for unequal treatment and fodder for false narratives. These numbers do not take into account the fact that young men in my neighborhood, a predominantly white neighborhood, do not do while young men in other neighborhoods are arrested indiscriminately. It does not reflect that sentences on minorities are harsher, and as such, their chances of being granted parole and rehabilitation are small. There are many Trayvon Martins out there. Many, it is sad that we have lost this beautiful young man. It is sad that we've lost a Michael Brown. Did Michael Brown have problems? Maybe he did, maybe he did not. We don't know. But the fact is, did he deserve execution? Well, some people do believe so. It is sad also that similar incidents occur frequently with very little news coverage. Trayvon's case seems to resonate, perhaps because he was 17, good-looking, and did not have a record. Every mother, respective of color, could envision him as their son, every father as well, and that touches our heart. We sense the pain that Trayvon's real parents must feel. In the America we envision, an America where there is no other, such compassion for our fellow human beings is commonplace, and no one son deserved to do this. No way. Like I said, this was written last year, but I want to interject before I continue something real quickly, because what the cops have learned from the Trayvon Martin case is that demonization by cop is also necessary when cop executes. And that is what they're doing with Michael Brown. Was Michael Brown a troubled kid? Maybe he was. But the execution style to justify the acts of the police require that the demonization be excessive. The demonization must take place. Think about it. How many people have been rough the way we saw that video, assuming that was a video of Michael Brown. How many people were that way who never got executed or who no one thought they deserved execution? Continuing with the piece. Many are emphasizing the fact that Mr. Zimmerman looked Hispanic. I am not sure why. Does this irrelevant detail somehow exonerate him from suspicion of a hate crime? Do they think that by presenting a narrative of minority on minority crime, they can diminish the meaning of this event? Do they hope that the news networks will lose interest if they are reminded that typically they have ignored minority and minority crime? What is important to note is that within the Hispanic community, there are many racists. Racism within we know in this country is found in every country in Latin America. Many of my South and Central American friends could pass for white, just as Mr. Zimmerman can. They still struggle to assimilate. Ultimately, they did. Now, in the case here that we have today with Michael Brown, things get a little different, don't they? Anyway, continuing. Many Americans want to see the Trayvon Martin case as a potential learning experience. I do not think this is likely because we are resistant to the only real solution, which involves everyone getting out of their comfort zones. The trial is probative. The attempt is to make dead Trayvon Martin a stereotypical, dangerous, violent black thug is in full vogue. Some attempt to assume the only reason Trayvon Martin have been shot is that he caused Zimmerman to do it, just like the only reason Michael Brown was shot is because he caused that cop to do it. You see, that cop wouldn't have executed him if he didn't do something deserving of a bullet or several bullets in his body. Just make believe this guy wasn't that black man, that black teenager. How would you feel? Would you react the same way? Many willfully attempt to make this plausible, even though Zimmerman followed Trayvon as if he were a criminal. Citizens must speak up against the no gun control bullies that use intimidation tactics and loads of money to insist upon lawlessness when it comes to deadly weapons. If we are to resolve real racial problems, we each must take it upon ourselves to lead by example, speak with honesty, and allow others to feel free to speak with honesty about what is in their hearts and minds without holding it against them. That's what I mean that, folks. The only way you get across this, any kind of divide, is to confront the divide, and not doing so assuming you will be judged. The only way you can be corrected, or any one of us can be corrected, is putting out the way we feel and being able to handle how we feel and being able to correct it for what we feel. Only when we've begun and maintained an open conversation about race and racism can we see past our preconceived notions and truly hear and see one another. Racism is not a problem with preassigned blame. Racism is simply a problem, and it belongs to all of us. Minorities do not have a monopoly on victimhood. The white majority does not have a monopoly on responsibility or guilt or anger towards those who have them feel guilty. The slate must be wiped clean. We must carry no grudges and begin by asking ourselves and one another, is this the way we want to go on living? Divided, lacking trust, lacking civility, lacking patriotism, not only love of America, but also love of Americans. Some of us resist asking such questions with openness because we fear we might end up losing something we think we now possess. But whatever it is we have now with the status quo, is it so wonderful that we wouldn't risk it for a higher level of understanding and a more fair, inclusive, and united country? Now think about it, folks, and give me a call. I would really love to hear from you all. And with that, 281-320 is on the air. Who do I have the honor of speaking with? 281-320.
This is Cherie. How are you doing, Egberta?
Cherie, how are you doing?
I'm
talk
great.
To me.
I'm calling in to make a comment on what's
I would
going
love
on
to
today
hear your
in
comment.
America. Me as a mother of a black son, I am at the point where I am really tired and fed up, basically, because people want to say, why is it every time something happens to a black young man, the first thing other people other than black people, predominantly who I'm speaking of are white Americans, they always want to say, why does it have to be about race? Well, the reason it has to be about race is because of the way this country was founded. It was founded upon using the black man's back and his strength to build this country, but at the same time to let them know, as far as white people are concerned, that white people are superior, that the black man isn't even a human being. His life means nothing to this world, per se, or to America. Americans always want to speak and judge against people, especially white Americans, on people who don't look or act the same way that they do. I'm to the point to where I'm really fed up with it, and I'm tired of it, and I'm going to speak out about it because it's my truth. It may not be your truth, but in my opinion, white America overall, they are born privileged. They get a privilege just by being white in America. Here in America, me as a black woman, I go through racism every day, all day. I live in the suburbs, and I see how it works. Living in the suburbs as a black woman, I've been stopped by the police and arrested by the police in my own neighborhood just because I'm black, and that's how I feel about it, because I ran a stop sign. The police said that I ran a stop sign. Is that a reason to arrest someone? And they said I wasn't wearing a seatbelt. I was handcuffed in my neighborhood and taken to jail and placed in jail for 15 hours in jail. And I see how it works. As I sat there in the holding cell, a white man was picked up on charges of having an outstanding warrant for tickets that weren't paid in Bel Air, Texas. The Bel Air police came to pick him up from downtown, and what did they do for the white man? They told him, hey, we really don't want to waste time booking you, so is there anyone that you can call? If you can call someone and get them to come down to the Bel Air police station and get there before I get there with you, we won't have to waste time booking you. Just have them bring the money to take care of the charges that are against you for not paying a speeding ticket. But meanwhile, make sure you tell them not to speed, but they can go at least 5 miles over the speed limit on their way there to pick you up. So I see how it happens every day, all day, and that's why I feel white people, in my opinion, feel as though they are privileged, and they are privileged just by having the skin color of being white in America.
Okay, Sherry, let me say something first of all, because I think I hope you heard the entire essay that I read. Were you able to hear the entire essay?
No, I didn't hear the entire essay you read, but I just had to call to say this.
That is an important statement. I want to say one thing first. I am in corroboration with a lot of different social justice groups, and the one thing to entertain the conversation that I always try to maintain is that all people, meaning all white folks, all black folks, don't have, and that's how I ended my thing, don't have a monopoly on racism or any of these issues. They do, folks have a monopoly, however, on power. And power is an essential factor in this entire discussion that I'm going to take a little bit further. Now, when it comes to privilege, we in Move to Amend, this is a national group that we work with, we do speak a whole lot about white privilege, and a large percentage of white people in our groups come out, and they would actually come out and tell you they understand what the definition of white privilege is. The definition of white privilege is that just having that skin color entitles you to certain things that, as a person, I am not to. I mean, it's a hard thing for many white people to grasp. It's a hard thing for many to grasp because they have not lived in your skin and seen the difference in treatment. And at the end of the essay, that's why I try to tell folks, it is important that if we are talking about white privilege at times, that you don't fear coming on a show like this. And if you think what Cherie just said about white privilege is incorrect, I want to have that discussion in real terms. But anyhow, Cherie, stick with me. I want to bring in, I think this is John. John, come on in, my brother. How you doing?
Yeah, good afternoon, Egberto. How you doing?
So far, so good, man. What do you have to tell me about the white privilege subject, my friend in San Antonio?
Well, I've talked about it before, and I totally agree with Cherie. I mean, white privilege has been part of our country's history since its founding. And
let me stop you right there, John, because I need to tell Cherie. Cherie, John is white. John is in the movement, and John understands all these concepts that we speak about. Continue, John.
Great.
Right, and this is part of what is holding our country back right now is that we don't want to have a conversation about race, and it's a huge problem. I mean, we saw it in so many different issues. We saw it with the Trayvon Martin case. We saw it with all the things that were going on with Sterling. There's also
right.
We saw it even with 12 Years a Slave, the different polling that came out, you know, the difference between Democrats and, or people who voted for Obama or voted for Romney, you know, the relationship and saying, you know, should 12 Years a Slave should have won Best Picture. I mean, it was only 10% of Republicans disagreed. And with Democrats, 50% agreed that it should have won, that saw it. And so, I mean, you see it everywhere you go. And it's just a shame that we can't really address this. You know, Julia Ioffe did an article for the New Republic, and Chris Hayes interviewed her yesterday. And basically, she went to a Starbucks in St. Louis, and it was mostly white. And,
I saw that. Yeah, go ahead. Tell a story. That's a great story.
Well, I mean, people don't really want to address the real issues of what's going on, and they just want to blame it. I mean, I don't understand it. You know, I guess it's just the racism is so ingrained in them that they don't even really look at the full picture of what's going on. I'm trying to get a full picture of what's going on, and I was talking about that with my 90-year-old mother yesterday, and we were talking about releasing the video and how that was absolutely unnecessary. And just within the last hour, we found out that the Department of Justice told the Ferguson police not to release that video. And if that
really
Yeah, and if that video wouldn't have been released, they probably wouldn't have had the problems that started, around midnight.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I do think that the DOJ and the FBI have been kind of slow on the gun to conduct their review of it. And Nixon was just totally, slow in his assessment.
I want to talk a little bit about the story that I think that you didn't quite say. There was this reporter that went into a Starbucks, and this is rather important about how the community feel. If you look at how this whole execution is being looked at, and by the way, I am judging it immediately. That was an execution. I don't, period. But if you take a look at how it is playing around the country, because you have stations like MSNBC covering it, it actually looks like, well, these people marching have an ally in America against the Ferguson police. But then this reporter went into what was her name? I don't remember her name. Went into
Julia Ioffe.
Yeah, and started speaking. If it's the same story we're talking about, she started speaking to a lot of regulars in there, and they were appalled that all the media was out here. They were appalled that they were spending so much time with these people. They were talking about these people as if they were not even humans. You know, to them, the death of that young man. I saw a video today, and the video today actually had a black guy admonishing the black community for the way they were acting in the riots. And he was admonishing them because he was pretty much saying, that isn't going to do anything, and you look dumb, and you look XYZ, he's talking about. And what he, I wrote back on the video, you don't understand systemic oppression, you don't understand these other issues. And for every one of those folks you see out there in public acting, let's say crazy or whatever, the amount of people in corporate America are working every day that has to go through what is systemic oppression, that it's being manifested in a different form there on the streets, that is what you should be looking at. You should be looking at, he says, what about all those folks that shoot each other up in the neighborhoods every day? Yes, that's horrendous, that's terrible, but the cops are the ones that should be there to protect against that, not that you should need to protect yourself. A lot of the white people in Ferguson, Missouri, that she spoke to, this woman was actually shocked at the contempt that they had for the media that was coming into their community, and not only for the media that was coming into the community, but for the people in the neighborhood. It just showed you a level of, and you know, we just keep hitting it, racism. I'm going to be honest with you. I just can't grasp it. But Sheree, before I bring back John, do you have anything else that you want to add to this? Because
well,
you've been silent for a while.
All I want to say is allegedly, he stole cigars.
Yes.
So justifiably, is it right for a police officer to shoot a young man in the back 10 times?
No. Look, the thing about it is that we shouldn't even be talking about this guy stealing from the store. He did it. His parents think that that was him on the camera. Okay? I mean, they came out and they said that. Yes, what I saw that guy do on the camera is nothing I haven't seen.
Right.
I have seen kids in Kingwood come to convenience store, snatch things and run. I've seen kids in Kingwood store push off on an attendant. I've seen all these things. I don't think anybody in Kingwood, Texas, or in any vicinity would say, that makes him an animal that deserves to be gunned down like a thug. Okay? The only thing that would make anyone believe that is a stereotype that they have of a typical black man.
Right, and that's because of what the media does. I'm a black woman, and when I watch television and you watch the news, it makes you afraid of who? Black men, because portray the bad images of black men.
And
yes,
the
things that they're showing are true. Yes, the people did it, which is true, but there's just as many other races of people doing some of the same crimes that the black men are committing, but that's not portrayed with the media. Why? Because the media always wants to instill fear. They always want to instill fear, and they always want to in my opinion, keep superiority, stating that white is best and black is bad. So that's
okay, I want to come in 1 second because, first of all, you're absolutely correct that if you take a look at the media, and that is why I think, Sheree, we have to communicate, right? Because let's say you are a white person sitting down in your white neighborhood and you're watching regular news and TV, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I think you've just said it, that the media will give the impression that those black folks are dangerous. That is the impression that you get watching TV. And sadly, it was interesting enough, MSNBC, one of these guys said, you know, that's how many even black folks are predisposed to think about young black men because of the portrayal there. Nobody sees that the vast majority of people good are simply good. I mean, that's just point blank. The vast majority of people are not out there to get you, are not out there to commit crimes. But by putting the focus on a particular sect or group or whatever, it gives you pause. I do a radio show at KPFT, and one of the people there, we were talking, and, you know, everybody feels pretty open to talk to me because I really ask folks when I'm talking to them to tell me exactly what you're thinking. Don't try to hold back because you think you're speaking to me what you really feel. And the reality is what I got out of that conversation is a lot of people, while, you know, as liberal as they may be, while they see what the police officer, what he did was wrong, they actually have within their being that somehow black folks have a predisposition, or some black folks have a predisposition lawless. Okay, you can get that from the discussion, and when you actually probe it a bit more, you see that they are actually conditioned by what they see on TV, by what they hear, and then the question becomes, how do you get that to stop being the case? How do you mitigate that? And that is the kind of stuff, as an activist myself, and all of us here, should be trying to handle. Because just saying those white people are bad is not the answer. You have to say, how can I I mean, because you, if we're going to exist as one society, you have to somehow be able to say, how can I work with these people who have these wrong thoughts to have them corrected so that these things don't keep happening? Because those cops, I don't know if you see the video. There's a couple of cops that when he's out there trying to hold back the crowd, he's out there calling them animals. You animals don't whatever. I don't know if you saw that one, John. Did you see that video that went viral?
I didn't see that one, but I did read that particular line.
Yeah. And you know, and that is who's there, who should be there to protect you. Who thinks you're an animal? You know? So I mean, the thing about it is, what do you and let me, this I should be throwing to you, John, in how do you reach people? How do you reach people who have been conditioned to believe that fear of black men is justified?
Well, you have to understand the history of America and how the white man has always pressed the black man, and you also have, I mean, in this, you know, to a lesser degree, you know, there's been all kinds of racism in this country and still exists, you know, against Hispanics. I see it here in San Antonio to this day, even though it is getting better, which is good. And I was very encouraged by when Obama came into office, because it seemed like that there was more of a consensus. And I guess that was a false narrative, or I guess there was a backlash to that to some degree. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of it is just having compassion, knowing history, putting yourself in their shoes, understanding, you know, why you shouldn't be that way, and then trying to understand, you know, where they're coming from. When I lived in New York City, I moved there, I guess, in 1990. And, you know, when I was riding on the subway, there was a lot of people, you know, and they weren't just African American, but they were all kinds of races, including white, that would you know, have kind of free rein on the subway late at night. There weren't as many cops, and the rate of crime was pretty high. And a lot of it was kind of scary to me, you know, because I, you know, even though I, you know, I love the artistic expression of a lot of great African Americans, and I love the people who, you know, were in the struggle for civil rights, I still hadn't really, you know, our city, San Antonio, is still very segregated, and so I didn't have a lot of contact with African Americans. And so, you know, it was like, I'd really, you know, I was trying to understand where they were coming from, but at the same time, you know, I was thinking, you know, intimidating people really isn't the answer. And again, it wasn't just black people; it was you know, Hispanics and white people too. And so, but you know, so you know, you just have to try to understand where they're coming from, and just not judge people at all by their appearance. You know, treat people like you would want to be treated. And
it is amazing that little thing, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, is still so powerful, John. But let me get 313 in here real quickly. 313, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Yes, Egberto, this is Mike from
Mike.
Lansing.
How you doing, Mike? I'm
not
glad
too bad.
You called in. Talk to me, my friend.
Yeah, I'm using a new microphone, and I want to make sure I'm coming through okay.
Oh, yeah, you're coming through, and you're probably coming through better than I am. I had an internet failure, so I had to use a good old backup telephone. Talk to me, Mike.
Well, I know I sent you that email yesterday, and I am still pretty hot about this entire issue. And you know, yeah, I mean, it just shows to me a complete lack of progress, or a stepping back of where we stand, you know, nationally. And
I want to stop you there, because I got your email and I sense your frustration in that email, and that's why I told you never let that frustration stop you from actually moving progress. First, feel that we've made progress, and I think this step backward is specifically because we've made progress. The Obama coalition that got formed, okay, is what America is ultimately going to look like. And there are some of those, and this is what I try to tell everybody, there are some of those in this country that just don't want that form because it means they see a loss of power. And in losing that power from having a coalition of this type, they are fighting back. So this step backward, I think, is to be expected. The question is, what do we do about it? Sorry for interrupting you, my brother. Come on back in.
No problem. But I think that, you know, President Obama being elected is where we saw the closet racist coming out.
Right.
You know, and announcing what is going on. I mean, this has been going on a long time. The Trayvon Martin part would probably be where I would start, where the fuse got lit for this, for what's happening in Ferguson. Ferguson didn't just happen all on its own, even though it's
right.
had serious problems. And what I see happening is basically things going into a, is Ferguson the Fort Sumter, you know, of 2014?
I think so. I actually do believe that. But you know what? I don't know what direction it takes it, but I do believe to some extent it is. And why do I think it is? I think there are a lot of things that people are going to use believing that they can work on people's fears for this next election. So everybody right now, both on all sides, are figuring out how they can create a narrative that chops the best part of the American population. That is going to continue. And the thing about it is, who is going to get the correct narrative? And my contention is that we must get the truthful narrative, because the truthful narrative is what, gotten correctly, going to get the folks out there to the polls to vote. And that is what we need. But stay with me, Mike. I want to bring in 414, and I'll be back to all of you. 414, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Bob from Wisconsin.
Talk to me, Bob.
The comment that was made regarding media purposely trying to promote a kind of or to encourage racism, I think ignores the fact that media is first and foremost about making money.
Right.
And if it bleeds, it leads.
And
right. if you can have violence and fear, that's what's going to motivate the media. It's not a matter of their being racist. They may be racist, but the fact of the matter is it's a far more deeply systemic problem where profit motive and the ability to sit there and appeal to the more base instinct of the viewer or the consumer of media is being exploited for economic ends. And
Bob, you know, Bob, I want to say one thing first of all. You're correct, but it's even more deep than what you're saying, and let me put it into perspective. The American plutocracy needs to create a certain level of division. Otherwise, think about this. If all people, and Michael, I lost you. I don't know what happened, but call back in, Michael. Think about this, Bob. Think about all these sects, S-E-C-T, all these different groups in this country, deciding to get together on economic issues, on their economic well-being. What do you think happens in this country? In other words, if white people yourself, I'm assuming you're white, of course.
Yep.
Okay. If white people start to say, wow, we're not worried about this conflict between black people. We're going to get together to make sure that we all grow together, that we realize that there is economic disparity that is killing the middle class, that is destroying the poor. If we all get together, we're really going to finally have our eyes on those that are really creating havoc. It isn't the immigrant that's creating the problem. It is that the plutocracy, the not even the 1%, but the 0.1% that has the capital to export jobs to slave labor and make us more poor, that's the problem. If those guys get together, that's a problem.
I'm in absolute agreement. Absolute agreement with what you say. We have plutocracy in place. We have the moneyed interests controlling too much, and the issue of racism is just a tool that is being used. One that's
But you know what? Do you know what, Bob? Guys like you, okay, in your community, in John's community, you have to be out there as a white guy reminding a lot of the guys that are going to listen to you that that is the reality. Right, John?
Absolutely.
Continue, Bob.
It's just the issue that has come up with the expression of racism through the militarization of our police department is really just symptomatic of a far more profound problem underlying it, which is the where the moneyed interests are and the fact that our media is controlled for moneyed interests to make money and not to serve the public interest at all.
Right.
I mean, to expect the media, our commercial media at least, to actually be fair or balanced or anything is sort of dreaming. And to sit there and blame media, I would prefer to blame the fact that they are successfully appealing to our more base instincts. And the fact is,
right,
like commercials, like advertising, it works.
Right.
The fact is, people do watch when it bleeds.
Right.
People
now, Bob,
watch when
Bob, I tell
conflict.
You what we have to do, Bob. I tell you what, you're correct. And the thing about it is, I don't want to forget to make this statement to everybody out there, because a lot of people aren't talking about it. Net neutrality, folks, is very important. It's what allows all of us to have equal access to the Internet. They're trying to fight to remove that ability. And note what Bob talks about the news media. What Bob talks about the news media is correct. We cannot count on that as news. News is going to come from independence, yourself, me, you. All of us are going to be the media, or all of us are already the media in the communications that we do, in the blog talk radios that we can do over the Internet. But if these guys get net neutrality, if we no longer have net neutrality, they will be able to shut down these channels as well. But, Bob, I need to get my friend. I think, who's this here? Come on in, 620, Jack.
Yeah, well, how you doing, Jack? Yeah,
Talk to me, Jack.
Maybe two things. Give me a moment. All right, that was the first, as far as the racial things, I was the first, we had the first fraternity, as far as I know, we go back to college days in 1950. Beta Sigma Tau had blacks.
So your white
Indians,
fraternity had
it is,
the first black folks
the first,
in it.
Number two. Number two is, what was I going to say? Number two was, I did a study. It was a part of a study. I am familiar with Ferguson Forest.
Mm-hmm.
It was back in 1963, 1965. Now, they had juvenile delinquency back then.
Right.
They did a study of the 1960s. It was mostly white.
Right.
Ferguson. But Ferguson was there with force. And as far as that, and I, number three is somebody asked me on Facebook, somebody commented, I never got touched by the police, involved with the police, and stopped by the police asking if I, my identity or anything like that. And that's true, but so what? I think the thing that needs to be done is this racial thing. I never was for it.
I know exactly what you mean, Jack. Jack, let me get Mike back in a real quick side, and then I'm going to give everybody their 15-second closeout. So put your thoughts down, Jack, and I'll be right back to you, my friend. Michael, you're back.
Yeah, sorry. I'm having technical difficulties with myself trying to get this to work. But I'm going to make this real quick. You know, our backs are up against the wall. You can only take so much. And the time has come to say, hey, no more. You know, I don't care if you're carrying a Confederate flag or not. It's time, you know, to make your choice. You're going to follow the United States flag, or you want to follow the Confederate flag. and that's about it. I'm ready to, I'm ready to say, hey, enough. I've been quiet too long. It's time to go.
And I think it's going to take a lot of people like you, Mike, to use the platforms that we have. I'm going to start discussing also with Coffee Party, instituting some sort of a mechanism that we can do or extend the kind of media that we do, because I think it's going to be very important that we do it above and beyond the crazy media that we have that Bob spoke about. Because, you know, if that continues, you're right, we're done. But I tell you, there's something important coming along in 2014, and that is if Democrats lose the Senate in 2014, there's going to be a whole lot of hell in the country, because we're really going to have a non-functioning state. So, I mean, I hope a lot of this, a lot of what's going on here kind of get people out there to not forget their civic duty. Cherie, you haven't spoken in a while.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I think everybody needs to stand up, and basically I know it's a lot of power with money being behind it with the American media, but just kind of let them know, hey, we're sick and tired of you portraying, you know, black people as being the villain all the time. Yeah, a lot of the crimes that they show on the media, yes, of course, there were black people involved, but at the same time, there's just as many other races of people committing the same type of crime or worse. Why don't you portray that on television? And we need to stand up and say, stop portraying black as bad and trying to instill fear in others, because we know that it works.
It sure does. It sure does. Go ahead.
The fact is that it does work, and that the primary purpose of media is to make money is why they use it and why they will continue to use it and why it's ridiculous without any power for us to tell them not to make money by exploiting the fears. I mean, it could be the Chinese. I mean, it was for how many years? The Chinese were the bad people, and they were exploited. And, you know, when you wanted to do, if I just read something about the fact that the cocaine was made a schedule, you know, was made as bad as it was because the Chinese were using it back at the turn of the century when they were building the railroads, and they needed to be suppressed, or at least they needed to be made the bad guys. So, you know, cocaine was made unacceptable. The same thing with marijuana and the Mexican, or I shouldn't say the Mexican, the people who used marijuana extensively. And all that business is still a matter of exploiting the fears of people of the new, the different, and for commercial ends. And as long as commercial interests dominate, then we can't expect fairness. We really cannot. And we have to change that idea of what media is supposed to do. You know, broadcasting in this country set up in 1934 was supposed to serve the public's interest, convenience, and necessity. I don't see that being done. I haven't seen
absolutely
it done in the last 50 years. So
absolutely not. Look, I tell you one thing, guys. I have great callers. I mean, when I put this title out there, I said to myself, I want to see what my audience is going to look like today. And I can tell you one thing. I am a happy camper because, again, we together, the folks that I see on not only here on the on Voice but on commentary, I am ecstatic. I want to say something specifically to Michael. Michael, you said, oh, it seems like we're going backward. While it may seem that way in the media, we're not going backward, my brother. We're going forward because the responses that I've seen, yes, I've seen the negative ones, but when it comes to thoughtful, real responses from people, black, white, and otherwise, I can tell you that that's what I'm getting. I'm getting the coalition, and the coalition is what's going to ring. So look, folks, we're getting at the end of the show. I'm going to give everybody 15 to 20 seconds to say a final comment. Cherie, starting with you, my dear friend.
Well, basically, I'd just like to say that wouldn't it be nice if we could just all get along?
I think, look, our show here shows that we can all get along when we put our minds to it. Thank you for calling in, Cherie.
You're welcome. Talk to you later.
All right. Jack.
Okay. Didn't get a chance to talk to very much, but I am going to be joining the coffee party pretty darn soon.
Excellent.
It's just a question of call me when, and give me the number to call, and I love this Jean K. I didn't have a chance to talk to her. I didn't have a chance to talk to Eric. What's her name? First name was Bob or something like that?
Right, Bob.
Was Bob Erickson? Because that Monday night, I'd like to talk to him. I feel he's a buddy. Is that a good buddy?
Yes.
For some funny reason.
Let me tell you something, Jack. Jack, I got to go, but here's this. You remember, you are part of this family, my brother, okay? You're a part of this family.
Although I'm not a douchebag yet.
That's okay. I enjoy having you on this show every week, my brother. So we'll keep talking. You keep calling in, my friend. Okay, Bob.
Sorry,
you're up.
Basically, I just think that we need to be aware that the problem is too greatly within ourselves, and the fact that our lesser natures, our more gross natures, are being appealed to. First and foremost, our emotionality is being appealed to by media, and that we have to keep that in mind, that we've got to stop trusting commercial media and be aware that the interest, the moneyed interest of the owners and operators of media have got to be distrusted, and we've got to find other mechanisms of communicating and figuring out what we really want.
Bob, you're absolutely correct, and please remember, stick here with Coffee Party. That's what we're going to be doing, alternate methods of informing. Michael, you're up.
Yeah, I just say amen.
Thank you very much, Mike. Go ahead, Michael.
No, I just want to say amen to to the last comment. It's time to look at overseas. It's time to look at overseas news feeds and not just the ones in the United States.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Michael. Okay, Jean, you got 30 seconds.
Yeah, I disagree. I think you've taken this whole media thing to where you've lost the sight of what the real issue is. The real issue was the death of this kid, and in my opinion, the media has been not great, but a little bit better than fair. And it's because I trust the media that I refer to, which is a lot of it are left-wing bloggers. But I think when you say things like, you can't trust the media at all, or you say things like, that every person, like on MSNBC, let's say a Rachel Maddow, has to put something before their corporate bidders before they approve it, is a total false dichotomy. It's completely false. They do not do this. I mean, things have changed drastically. 10 years ago, there was no liberal voice at all on television.
Let me tell you, John, I know what you're saying. I think we spoke about this before. Let's have an entire subject on this. I don't think any of the people that spoke before really took it to the level that maybe you picked it up on. I think what they mean is the general – in general, but I let's talk about that another time because I have to close this baby out. Folks, please remember we have three shows on Coffee Party Network. We have Press 1 for Democracy with Dan Aronson on Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern. On Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, we have Lunch with Loudon. And, of course, Saturdays you're here with me, Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis. Look, folks, I appreciate the hour that you gave me. You guys have a wonderful Saturday and the rest of the week, and I'll talk to you on Monday from KPFT.